Would you consider yourself to be rich, wealthy, well off, well to do, however you want to phrase it? Would you consider that to be your condition? Think about it for a moment. Or maybe you think that you are poor and the opposite of those. Have we been blessed? And I thought the first message dovetailed very seamlessly into what I want to talk about today very well. I was, as we do every Thanksgiving, our family gets together for, when I say our family, I'm talking about my wife and I's children, which are now all grown and out on their own and so forth. We all try to get together for Thanksgiving. And as is the case every year, I always do ask the Thanksgiving blessing. And I thought it would be worth my time to stop and see or think about, what have I been blessed with? How have we been blessed? Do we have anything to be blessed for besides the turkey that we had for the Thanksgiving dinner and an abundance of other food too, which is always the case? It seemed like this year we almost outdid our past efforts. So it was quite the meal, quite the spread we had there. But I thought beyond that, I should give some time and some thought to thinking and to seeing what it was that we've been blessed with, or what it was that we have to be thankful for, what we have to have gratitude for, to be gracious about, and so on. I know we use that platitude quite a bit, but it is true, an attitude of gratitude, and which we should have, and we hear it all the time. And in doing some research, I went to the U.S. Bureau of Census Bureau, and they had done a survey. According to the U.S. Census Bureau survey, in the U.S., in January 2019, the median, which means, the median means half of them are, if you're starting here, half of them are above that, and half the people in the country would be below that. That's the, in the middle is the median. The median per household income is, in January 2019, and I'll just pause there for a second and wrap your mind around it, what you might think that would be, how much the median income would be in the United States of America. It's $63,688, which, it's sort of astounding, I thought, that half the people in this country make it that much or above. Now, that doesn't mean, obviously, that there's no poverty in the United States, because there is. There are pockets of poverty and pockets of people who are very poor. But in this country, if somebody wants to and really needs it, because of this $63,688 that the people above them are making, we have so many programs, that means a lot of taxes, a lot of our money going for programs that can and do help people if they need it, and oftentimes if they don't need it too. But at any rate, there is a lot of financial help or other help, whatever the help may be. There's a lot of it available if needed in this country. So just because we may not have much, the blessings of this country are astounding. It's amazing. Worldwide, and this would figure in that $63,088 or $688, worldwide, the median income, and this includes a lot of other rich countries like Australia, and some countries in Europe, England and so forth, Great Britain. The median for the rest of the world is $9,733. That's not very much money to live on in a year. But we have been put into a pocket of wealth. Most of us have been born there. There may be some that came here from other countries. But at any rate, we have been blessed above practically everybody, above and beyond the rest of the world. Now, we have things to be thankful for. But there is a sign of the times. If you would turn back to Second Timothy, the third chapter. And let me just qualify it a little bit by saying America is a giving, as a whole, is a giving, sharing country. If we see somebody or something in need, generally speaking, America, whether it's abroad or at home, generally speaking, America is ready, willing, and able to help. And that doesn't just include the government. That includes your neighbor and the people around you and the people in the communities. Generally speaking, that happens. But in 2 Timothy 3 and in verse 1, we see some of the reminded that this would be a sign of the times. Know this, it says, that in the last days, stressful times, perilous times will come. For, and it lists some things, men will be lovers of themselves. I think we've noticed that people are selfish or are becoming more and more selfish, it seems like. They're lovers of money. Yeah, that's greed is on the rise as well. It's on the increase also. They're boastful. Nobody, when we see people in, people that are famous or people on TV, a lot of them are self-promoters. You really see that. They're proud, too proud and arrogant for a lot of things. They're blasphemers. There are a lot of blasphemers that are not afraid, and I think this was mentioned in the sermonette, that are not afraid to blaspheme or speak against God, against God's way, against God's people, against Christianity in general. And there are a lot of blasphemers around, and it seems like more and more and more all the time. Now, sometimes those things, it seems like there may be a lot more than there are by virtue of the fact that they're the ones that are shouting it out on TV and the news and in online and so forth, and that may be part of it. Disobedient to parents. Yeah, that certainly is on the increase. And here's the one I was looking for. Unthankful. It's a sign of the times to be unthankful. To be maybe just to sort of take it for granted, or worse yet, to think I'm owed for this. This is owed to me. This is something that, why should I be thankful? It should be mine, or it is mine, and so on and so forth. But notice in James, the first chapter, James, one of my favorite books in the Bible, or in the New Testament, it's a very practical Christian living book. It says in verse 17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and it comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. We're not going to, God, the good gifts that God gives, he's not going down here and then all of a sudden he's going to drift off to the right or to the left. There's no shadow of turning with God. He has a set program, and that's what he is going to be continuing on. But every good gift and every thing that we have comes from our Maker, God. And, of course, it's not that we're owed all of those things. It's not that we should be arrogant about it and that we should be expecting everything for nothing. In Psalms, and we'll go through a couple of scriptures here to open up, and then we'll get into some other things. But in Psalms chapter 140, Psalms has a lot of chapters, and I think it has 150, I believe. But 140 is a Psalm of David, and in verse 12, we'll read verse 12 and verse 13. It says, I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted and justice for the poor. So if we're poor, God's going to be on our side. Surely the righteous, whether rich or poor, shall give thanks to your name. The upright shall dwell in your presence. So the righteous are going to give thanks. So if we want to be righteous, part of being righteous is giving thanks to God for what we have. And it's more than a day. Thanksgiving is more than, giving thanks is more than one day. The day that we have designated for Thanksgiving is a good thing. People as a whole in the country get together and they generally are thankful for what they have, all the abundance they have and so forth. And it's a good thing because it still to some extent acknowledges God, where a lot of the rest of the time there's not much acknowledgement of God. It's taken out of the schools, out of the courts, out of all the public square, as they say. It's taken out of everything, it seems like, and more and more and more so as we go further towards the last days, as it said. But the righteous are always going to continue to give thanks and be grateful and have gratitude towards God for what they have, the blessings that they have. And there's one more scripture that I want to go to right now, and it's sort of the foundational scripture for this, and it's in 1 Thessalonians 5. Paul, in writing to the church of Thessalonica, I think it was on, he started that church probably, I think, on his second evangelistic trip up around, he made big long circuits. You can read about it in Acts, the 17th chapter, if you'd care to. But again, we'll start in verse 14 of 1 Thessalonians 5. And in verse 14, it says he's giving the brethren encouragement. He's wanna encourage them to do some things or watch out for some things. And he says, I exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, behold the weak, be patient with everyone, with all. See that no one renders evil for evil to anyone, but always pursue what is good, both for yourselves and for others, or for all. What we do is what he's saying, is what we do, make sure that it's good for everyone. It can be good for us, but if it's bad for somebody else, it's not good for us. We need to make sure that it's good for everyone. Verse 16. And this is an easy one. Rejoice always. Rejoicing is a lot of fun, and we should be rejoicing. But sometimes we rejoice maybe over the wrong things. Even if we're in trials, we're told in some places to rejoice. Count it all joy. Pray without ceasing, which that's one of the things that we hear quite a bit. Pray without ceasing. And in verse 18, in everything, give thanks, for this is the will of God in Jesus Christ for you. It is God's will that we be thankful for everything. In everything, give thanks. But here's what we want to address. Do we have anything to be thankful for? Are we rich? Are we poor? Do we have enough to be thankful for? I want to put that into a little bit of perspective by telling you a story about a rich family and a story about a poor family. Marcy Smith said that 1946 was one of her most memorable years, 1946. Marcy lived with Her older sister, Marcy, was 14. Her older sister was 16. Her younger sister, Osi, was 12. And they lived with their mom in their little house. And obviously, it wasn't a very huge, big, exciting house, but it provided for them. Their dad had died in 1941, the year of Pearl Harbor, had died 5 years earlier and left their mom with seven children, school-age children, to fend for. And he hadn't left them with much money. As you remember, 1941 was coming out of the Depression of the 30s, and people were still struggling and trying to get back on their feet. By 1946, the older two brothers had moved out of the house, and the younger two, the older two sisters, they had married and gone off and moved off by themselves. So it was just mom and the three girls to fend for themselves. They went to church every week, and they had to walk over a mile to get there, but they went every week. It was one of their highlights of their week. And one morning in church, the pastor said that in a month, we're going to take up a collection for a poor family. So I want you to start saving for this collection for the poor family so that we can help this poor family out and so that they can have a little better life. Excuse me. So as time went on, they went home after church, and they were singing all the way home because they were excited about the prospect of helping somebody out. That really made them excited. And they were planning or seeing, what can we do with our little meager efforts? What can we do to help in this collection for this poor family? Well, they decided that if they were to get a 50-pound bag of potatoes and just eat potatoes all month, and if they were going to turn off the lights at night and not use electric and not use the radio, they could use that money, probably $20 they would save on groceries, and they could add that into the collection. And they could, the proceeds from turning off the electric and being in the dark and so forth, they could use that money also to contribute, to add to the collection. And they sat around and they planned other things that they could do. For 15 cents, they could get enough yarn to make three potholders to sell for a dollar. So they did that. They got all the babysitting jobs that they could, the girls did, to collect money, as much money as they could. They went around to the neighborhood and knew some people with babies, and they would solicit babysitting jobs and yard cleaning jobs and all kinds of extra things that they could do to help for this collection for this poor family. And they expected quite a bit of money from the congregation, because after all, there were 80 people in the congregation. There was four of them, so they figured they'd have about four times as much or so as what they were, maybe 20 times as much as what they were going to be contributing. And they sat around trying to think what this poor family was going to do, how this poor family would be blessed, and how they'd be excited about having this additional money and would be able to do a lot of things. She said this was the best month of their year. They were excited about this. And again, as I said, they were sitting in the dark talking about it because they had turned off the electric, and they weren't able, obviously, to they saved money by doing that and were able to contribute that. The day before the collection, Marcy and Osi, the two younger ones, went to the bank in town, and they cashed in their change, and of all things, they were able to get three nice new $20 bills for their change and one $10 bill for a total of $70 that they were going to add to the collection. They never had seen so much money. They thought, we are rich. Look at all this money. They had never had that much money. They had never seen that much money. They were so excited about it that they could hardly sleep that night before church the next day to be able to contribute this money. The next morning when it came time to go to church, it was raining real hard, and they had no umbrellas, and it was over a mile to get to church. They walked to church, and they were happy, and they were singing in the rain. Their cardboard in their shoes that they'd put in their shoes to cover the holes got all wet and came apart, and their feet got wet, but they didn't care because they were excited. They were on a mission. When they got to church, a lot of the other young girls had nice new dresses, but they didn't care that theirs were old and faded. They had a purpose. They had something that they wanted to do. The time came for them to put in the money. The collection came around, and each of the girls put in $20, and Mom put in the $10 bill. They sang all the way home. What a joy it was. They were home, and they were having a great time, and Mom had a surprise for them. She'd got a dozen eggs, and now they had eggs with their fried potatoes. Made it worthwhile. Later in the afternoon, towards evening, the pastor drove up to the door and knocked on the door, and Mom went to the door, and he handed her an envelope. When she came back, the girls asked, what did he give you? She opened it up, and out fell three $20 bills, one $10 bill, and 17 $1 bills. 17 $1 bills. And it came to $87. Gloom settled on them. They had never looked on themselves as being poor. They thought they all thought they were doing well, doing okay. It never had occurred to them that they would be poor, but here they brought them the money for the poor family, so they must be poor. Made a big difference. Made a big difference in their life. But think about it. What makes us rich, or what makes us poor? Is it money? Possessions? Is it what we have? How big our checking account is, or our bank balance is, or how nice of a car we drive? All those things aren't wrong, and none of them, they're all nice. They're all enjoyable. But is that what makes us rich or poor? I also want to talk about a rich church and a poor church or congregation. The rich church, it was about 45 miles southeast of Philadelphia. Now, this wasn't Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This was Philadelphia in Asia. It's recorded in Revelation, the third chapter. And obviously, you know which church I'm talking about. All these things, the seven churches of Revelation, this information, while we can read it off the page, it's all given in a context. I'll give you an example. Canton used to pretty much be thought of as a blue-collar town, and I don't know if it's quite as much that way now. And North Canton was always considered to be the wealthy part of, area where all the big people, wealthy people lived. One example is a place where Belden Village is. Now, Belden Village is named after the people who make brick. Sugar Creek still has a lot of that left. I don't think Canton does so much anymore, but there used to be a lot of bricks made here in Canton, Ohio. And it was sort of a hub for brick making. A lot of the streets are still paved with bricks in Canton, even though they may not show. In some places they do. They've revitalized or revived them. But the bricks were mostly all paved, or the streets were mostly all paved with bricks, but now they've been asphalt and concreted over. But they were known for something, bricks. But they were known as blue collar. They also were known for steel. Republic Steel used to be here, and they had a big steel plant. And the area also used to be world famous for its Timken tapered roller bearings. Machinery all over the world used Timken tapered roller bearings for doing all types of mechanical processing of whatever the machines were doing, and that's what it was famous for. Well, Laodicea was no different. It was a wealthy town. It was a wealthy area. They were known for having a lot of gold, for one thing. And I wanted to give credit where credit is due. A lot of this information about Laodicea comes from the Expositor's Bible Commentary, the research they have done on this. But they had a lot of gold. They were wealthy. They also had, they were known for making sleek black wool, either garments or cloth, for making garments. They were known for those two things. And the third thing that they were known for, they had a famous school of medicine there where they made eye salve that was supposed to be very good and effective in treating all kinds of eye ailments. And they were known for those three things. But the one thing they didn't have, and that was a good water supply. The water came from about 6 miles away through some kind of an aqueduct, and it was cold when it started, but guess what happened by the time it got to Laodicea? It was lukewarm. It had warmed up on the way, and by the time it got there, it was somewhere between hot and cold, and I'm sure that if you've ever had water and you were getting a glass of water and were expecting a nice, cool glass of water, and you get it tepid, warm, lukewarm water in your mouth, you want to spit it out because it's not what you expected and not what you want. But this was the city of Laodicea. Now let's read here a little bit about the city of Laodicea in chapter 3 of Revelation. And we'll start in verse 14. It says, to the angel or the messenger of the church at Laodicea, write. These things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. He wasn't the Amen, faithful and true witness wasn't, he wasn't created, but he was there at the beginning when this all happened. I know your works, that you are neither hot or cold. I could wish that you were hot or you were cold. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say, this was the rich church that really was poor. It was a rich church that really was poor. Because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing. And you don't know, he says, that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. I had a friend years ago, and his, as many people do, his church, it wasn't in our tradition, the churches of God or anything like that, it was a Protestant church, and his church believed that they were the Philadelphia Church of God, or the Philadelphia Church. I don't know if they call themselves Church of God necessarily, but Philadelphia Church. And we had a conversation one time, and he was realistic about it. He said, you know, he said, there's a lot of people who believe that these were different church eras and so forth, and that they're the, but he said, you've never heard of anybody saying, we're the Laodicean Church of God, or the Laodicean Church. Everybody wanted to be the Philadelphia Church, which is the next, or the previous church to Laodicea. And I thought about that when I was doing this, and reality is there are, I don't know, maybe half a dozen different churches, or not churches, but towns in the United States that are named Philadelphia, including the one in Pennsylvania, obviously. But there's a number of other ones, big and mostly smaller ones. But in my search, I could not find one church or one town that was called Laodicea. And I don't think there are any. But anyway, he says here in verse 17, you are wretched, miserable, you are poor, blind, and naked. Now, this probably, as we go along here, he says, I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and that you anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. Now, this is all sort of a, when you consider what this town was famous for, these are all sort of a play on what the town was famous for their black clothing. But he says here, I said that you should buy white garments, which are a sign of purity, not the black garments that they're selling here in this town, or not the gold that this town is known for, or not the eye salve that this town is known for, but that you should buy gold, white garments, and eye salve for me. Now, obviously, what he was talking about here in verse 18 was not physical. It was spiritual. It meant a relationship with Jesus Christ. It meant a relationship with God. The gold and the gold, actually, that's refined in the fire, and that you can be truly rich, and the white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness be not revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. He was turning it back sort of on this community and telling them, using this as an example or an analogy, that they were to be buying or they were to be getting spiritual clothing, spiritual eye salve. Remember, as Jesus Christ several times said in the Gospels, that they have eyes, but they don't see and they don't understand. Well, here he's offering eyes that do see and understand. As many as I love, he says in verse 19, I rebuke and chasten. Therefore, be zealous and repent. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in to him and dine with him, and he with me. And I'm not reading this to say this is all the, you know, this is the whole thing behind all of this. I'm just making the analogy or reading this for us to clarify whether we're rich or whether we're poor, whether we're wealthy or whether we're not wealthy, whether we're among those that are without, or whether we do have certain things to be thankful for. There was another church. This church was poor, but they were rich. The exact opposite of the church in Laodicea. A poor church that was rich. They were about 40 miles north of the first church listed. They were about 40 miles north of Ephesus. And it starts in verse 8. To the messenger, the angel of the church in Smyrna, write. And again, as I said, all these things were in context. Smyrna also was a rich, wealthy town. It also had a lot of things. It had a lot of trade going on, but there was an issue with Smyrna that made people, not people in general, but followers of Christ, disciples of Christ, there was an issue that made them to be poor physically. And that issue was, Smyrna was a center for emperor worship. Now, what did that mean to the church in Smyrna? Well, every year there was a ceremony where the people in Smyrna, if you lived in Smyrna, to be a citizen and to be a part of it, you had to burn incense on the altar of the emperor, and you had to give your testimony that you believed in the emperor as God. That's what was required for you to get a certificate to live there, or to conduct commerce there, or to be in that area, which made it very, very difficult. And a lot of people were incarcerated because they didn't, or they refused to do that. So here you had a town that was also wealthy, but it wasn't passed on to the, as it was in Laodicea, to the Christians or the disciples that were lived in the area, or indigenous to the area. It says, to the church, to the angel of the church in Smyrna, and this is the shortest of all the passages, less comment or commentary about the church. The other being Philadelphia. These things, says the first and the last, who was dead and came to life. Now, when they were incarcerated, when they went to prison in Smyrna, they didn't go there as punishment. They went there as a prelude to execution. So if you went there, you were held till you were executed, basically. So here he is mentioning that it was the first and the last, who was dead and came to life, which is an example to them. I know your works, tribulation and poverty, but you are rich, he says. And again, this is one of the two churches of the seven churches that had no black marks against them. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. And, you know, it's like when you were a child, a little bit. You know, your mom would tell you, wait till your dad gets home. And that's what this is, the things that you're about to suffer. It was in the back of their mind. When your dad got home, he took care of things. And he said that here you are about to suffer some things. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful until death. If you're thrown into prison, chances are you're not going to come out alive. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. Spiritual things. They didn't have any wealth, but they were still wealthy beyond belief, as we are, but maybe not physically, but they were spiritually. They were very, very wealthy, as you can see if you read between the lines, because they refused to burn incense at the altar of the emperor and declaring the emperor to be God. But Christ wasn't talking again about spiritual thing or physical things. He was talking about spiritual things. The context shows that. Now, I promised you a story about a rich family and a poor family. So I gave you the story of the rich family, but let me finish the story of the poor family. The Smith family found out following the offer or the offering that they were poor, because the pastor, after all, had brought them the money for the poor family. They never had thought of themselves as being poor. They had a happy life. They felt sorry for anybody that didn't have all the family running in and out that they did, nieces and nephews and all the happy things that they had in their life. Just because they didn't have a lot of things did not make them poor, or at least they never thought that. They didn't think that, you know, having just one or two forks and spoons was a problem. They'd see there was always sort of a joke, who's getting the fork tonight and who's getting the spoon tonight when we go to eat. The two knives they had, they just passed along to whoever would need a knife at that particular time. They had never grown up with anything better, so they didn't think it was a problem. And it wasn't. It shouldn't have been. But then, when they found out that they were poor, they didn't want to go to school because they were embarrassed because the other kids had new shoes, they had new clothing, and they probably knew. The other children in school probably knew that Marcy saw it, at least. They know that we're poor. Isn't that embarrassing? They didn't want to go to church because to go to church, they'd be compared to all the other girls in church, all the other families in church who had more than they did, that looked more well-kept, more better dressed, and so forth. They didn't want to do that. But Mom wouldn't let him not go to church. He said, "We're going to church." And Mom tried to sing on the way to church, but Marcy and the girls wouldn't join in because they were too depressed. When they got to church, there was a missionary speaker in the church that day. And he was saying that in Africa, the churches, they make baked bricks and build churches out of them, out of just clay and dirt and water. They make baked bricks and they make walls and so forth out of them. But it costs $100 to put a roof on one of those churches, and they don't have $100. So we're going to take a collection here and to see if we can get a little bit of money to help. He's going around to a bunch of different churches and to help. He wanted to help with putting a roof on one of these churches over in Africa. So the collection plate went around. They had, by the way, they had not been able to decide and hadn't really talked much about what they were going to do with their money. So when the collection plate came around, Mom passed it to Darlene, and Darlene passed it to Marcy, and Marcy passed it to O.C., and O.C. put the envelope in the collection plate. When the collection was all taken up and the missionary said how much it was just a little bit more than $100. $87 of it was theirs from the envelope that they had contributed. For the first time the whole week, they started smiling because they were happy again. After all, the minister, the missionary said, "I was surprised," he said, "to collect this much money from this small church of 80 people. You must have some rich families in this congregation." And they told themselves and they talked about it, said, "Yeah, we must be the rich family in this church because they're the ones who gave 90% of the money to build, to put the roof on the church." And she said, "After that, in my whole life, I never felt poor again." So they were not just the poor family, they were the rich family. And they went from rich when they thought they had all this money that they had collected and made up to try and help the poor family. They felt rich. They went from being rich to being poor to being rich. But what happened here? Did they get a bunch of money? Did they win the lottery, which wasn't in place in 1946? But did they win the lottery, or did some rich uncle die, or did somebody bring them a whole truckload of new things, furniture, and so forth? No. It was all up here. It was all in their mind. They were wealthy now because they thought they were wealthy. Before, when they got the money for the poor family, they were poor because they thought they were poor. But they realized they had things, a family, they had purpose. They had a lot of things to be thankful for that they didn't really think about before all this happened. We're the same way. We, as I mentioned, are blessed beyond measure. $63,688 a household for median income is a lot of wealth in most places. Maybe not totally here in the United States of America, but when you think about it, it is. It's a lot of wealth. When I was a kid, you never saw a $100 bill. You were lucky if you saw a $10 bill. Maybe. Possibly five. But never a $100 bill. But now, $100 bills are pretty commonplace. I have a few of them myself. And maybe I'll get some more, I suppose. James, the second chapter. James 2, back to James. James 2 verse 5 sort of puts it succinctly. Listen, it says, my beloved brethren. The brothers he's talking about are the 12 tribes of Israel, because that's who this letter was addressed to in the very first or second verse here. He said, has God not chosen the poor of this world to be rich in faith? We can be rich or we can be poor, and the heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him. Is that not us? The chosen, the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love us. We can be rich or we can be poor. It's our choice. If we don't have a lot of material things, that doesn't mean we're not rich, because we have, as we heard in the sermonette, a lot of things that make us wealthy, like the church in Smyrna had. We have a lot of things that make us wealthy, and it's not material things. It's not physical things. It's the things that God gives us. We're like the Smith family, who thought they were rich, thought they were poor, and found out that they really were rich. We're like Laodicea. Or we're not like Laodicea, hopefully. We're not wealthy but poor, we hope. But we can be like Smyrna, who was poor but wealthy. And I'm not saying any of us are poor. I'm just saying that it's in our mind. It's not in our possessions, in material things. But how does being thankful for what we have, those blessings, the riches that we have, how does that impact us? How does that help us? Well, I'll give you a couple of ideas. Gratitude to God, thankfulness to God, obeys the first commandment. And you might ask, well, how is that it obeys the first commandment? Well, it shows by our actions and by our life that we consider God to be supreme, that we consider God to have the supremacy in all things. Because, as we read earlier, that all good gifts come from above, come from God. God owns everything. God made everything. He shares it with us. But it doesn't mean that it's owed to us. It means that we still need to show gratitude for it. It builds faith, because we know where our possessions and where what we need comes from. It comes from God. It acknowledges God's provision for us. God has promised to provide for his own. We read that in Psalms. That God helps the afflicted and the poor. That God will help us. It keeps us humble. It keeps us from thinking we're more than we are. That's what happened to Satan. Satan thought that he could rise above God. He thought he could do what God did. He thought that, and his attitude was, well, who does he think he is? Being thankful to God helps us to avoid that attitude of arrogance, that attitude of dependence on ourselves. It keeps us grounded and humble. Being thankful to God does. It builds faith by acknowledging God's provision, that God is the one who provides for us. And all of those things strengthen our relationship with God. It's when we are thankful to God, we will are developing a better, stronger, more rock-solid relationship with God, because we realize where all our good things come from, and we realize how we are, we have what we have. We also realize that God has called us and what potential we have. We have the potential to be part of God's family. It also, it doesn't just strengthen our relationship with God. It also strengthens our relationship with each other. And it does that. It helps us, again, from becoming arrogant. It helps us to be, as we read in 2 Timothy, it helps us from being boasters and proud and arrogant and to think me, 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 to think selfish. It helps us to put ourselves aside and realize that others have value, that others are also made in the image of God, that others have the same potential to be in the family of God that we are. It helps us to learn that we need each other. As a saying is, man is not an island unto himself. We need each other. When God created Adam, he looked and he said, you know what? It is not good for man to be alone. So he created a counterpart for Adam. He created Eve to be his partner, to be part of who he is, and realize that it's not good to be alone, that we need each other. It says that we are to not forsake the assembly of ourselves together, because that's what helps strengthen each other. We help to iron sharpen iron. We help encourage each other. We help to be stronger. We're stronger together than we are apart. And this giving thanks or being thankful to others helps develop that, helps realize that. It helps us to give credit where credit is due. Sometimes somebody does something or somebody says something and we don't attribute what they said, when we make it seem like that's our own doing or saying or whatever. We should credit others when there's something that we are doing that we have gotten from somebody else. Give credit for that to that person, that particular person, where you got that from. Whether it's when you're reading something and you attribute it to somebody, whoever wrote it, or whether was watching a show and it had featured three girls, and it's a pretty good show. I don't watch much TV, but this one's sort of funny and has a lot of good moral value to it. The three girls, the middle girl said that she was in school and she was a little on the ditzy side, I guess you could say. And she was out there and she was saying that the best deeds, she'd read from this philosopher, the best deeds are those that you do that nobody knows about. And she was right. It was true. So she went and she washed the dishes, which was very unlike her. But she left, and the mom came in, and the youngest girl was standing there, and the mom, oh, isn't it nice you washed the dishes? Well, she didn't say, I washed the dishes, but she left her mom believe that she did. She left her mom think, oh, you're such a good girl. No wonder you're our favorite. You're such a good person. Well, that's what I'm talking about here. Credit where credit is due. The right thing for her would have been to do is say, no, my sister did it, but she didn't. Thirdly, it helps us to build stronger relationships with each other. Communicating gratitude. When I do something and somebody notices and says thank you or job well done or whatever, it makes a stronger bond with that person for him or her having said that to me. They noticed it. Not that we do everything to be noticed, obviously, but still, when it is acknowledged, whether it's at work, whether it's in your family, whether it's a church or wherever it is, when that's communicated, when gratitude and thankfulness is communicated for that, it develops a stronger relationship. There are many other things that an attitude of gratitude will do in our relationship with God and with our fellow man. But it's not giving thanks, and thanksgiving is not just one day. It is a way of life that God expects from us. It is a way of life that benefits the giver and it ingratiates the receiver. Do we have anything to be thankful for? I think as we went through this and considered some of those things, I think we could all say that we are rich and we are not poor. Maybe we don't have a lot physically, but we do have a lot. Psalm 23 says, and we won't turn there, says, "Our cup runneth over." It's one of the favorite psalms and or one of the favorite chapters in the whole Bible for many people. Almost every funeral has Psalms, the 23rd chapter on it. And one part of that is says that our cup runneth over. And it truly does. We are blessed beyond measure. The title of this message was For Richer or Poorer, and we are in Christ's service for richer or for poorer. As we read in 1 Thessalonians 5:18, therefore, in everything, give thanks to God, for this is the will of God.